Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? Isn't that fair? Throw it away. All right?
Tons of popcorn there. Yeah. And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 191, Solar Babies.
Yeah, we just finished it with, that was the...
mellifluous, sweet, sweet sounds of Smokey Robinson, and the Miracles.
Sans the Miracles.
Oh, really?
That was Smokey Robinson, Smokey Solo.
Wow.
That was Love Will Set You Free, parentheses, theme from Solar Babies.
Hmm.
Now, I gotta ask you a question. Why was this movie called Solar Babies?
Well, like other post-apocalyptic wasteland type films of this ilk, there is a quest and there's a struggle that humanity has to face in this dystopian future, and that is, of course, a lack of water, or more precisely, water controlled by this nefarious entity called
the Protectorate. Yes.
And they are this totalitarian regime led by this sort of Gestapo-esque figure and this Dickensian warden, played by Charles Durning, and they...
Well, hold on. So the Gestapian figure, that's Richard Jordan playing him, and Charles Durning, he's in this for like a scene. He's the Dickensian warden, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and they, I guess, whoa.
But I see why it's called Solar Babies. Well, because they got plenty of solar. That's the whole thing. Yeah, this is a desert
wasteland. They're not
wasteland.
Lacking sun, yeah.
There's lots of sun.
They should have been called Aqua Babies.
Exactly.
Because they're wanting H2O.
Right. If not Muppet Babies, perhaps.
Yeah. And like other post-apocalyptic wasteland movies, there's a combat sport that entertains the masses. But unlike those other movies, they... See, like Rollerball, there's a sport that entertains the masses.
There's a sport here like Rollerball, basically.
Yeah, it's called skateball,
right.
Not to be confused with Rollerball, and it's basically lacrosse.
It's not really entertaining the masses. I'm sorry to... You know, it's entertaining the denizens of the orphanage, and it's also supposed to serve a purpose to train them to be soldiers or to be warriors of...
Who knows?
Whatever wasteland launchiness. No, that's. I'll get to that in a second. But
yeah, and this is basically like our national sport, lacrosse. Except instead of being played on foot,
it's lacrosse our national sport. I thought it was hockey.
Yeah, lacrosse is technically our national sport. It's an ancient indigenous sport,
really?
Native to North America.
I did not know this.
Yes, and You have like a stick, you use it to throw a ball around. It's basically hockey except without the ice, without the skates. Here, instead of being on foot...
Yeah, without the excitement, without the fun.
Well, I don't know. Lacrosse is pretty violent. And here it's played on roller skates. I guess as a tie-in to the 80s was all about roller skates. You have tons of different roller skating themed films that came out in this
such
period.
Such as Xanadu?
Xanadu, indeed.
And what else? Skate Town USA?
And the aforementioned roller derby.
Roller ball.
Mm. Okay, rollerball, which is based on the nascent sport at the time of roller derby. Where do you go from here?
Okay. First of all, Solar Babies. This is a movie from 1986. And this was sent to us by one of our absolute favorite listeners, DM Elms. Thank you, D, for this movie. This was a fantastic watch. We just finished watching it right now. And I still feel the glow of Bodai from this movie. This is a real fun movie. I mean, okay, let's just say this is a hodgepodge. I mean, this is a mutt. This is a ripoff in every sense of the word. This thing takes elements from Rollerball, Star Wars, a lot of Mad Max, especially Beyond Thunderdome, a little bit of the Blue Lagoon, even a bit of E.T.
A bit of Return of the Jedi, a little bit of Lawrence of Arabia, everything.
Puts in a blender, puree, boom, you got this thing called Solar Babies. Now, I am a child of the 80s. I'm an aficionado of the 80s. I love the 80s. I'm kind of obsessed with the 80s in a sense. And yet, before Dee mentioned this movie, I had never heard of this movie. Was I away camp when it came out? I don't know. But it just never crossed my radar, and I don't think you had heard of it either. And when this movie did come out, it was not very well received, was it? In fact,
I believe
the critics are quite unkind.
Yeah, Leonard Maltin said it was appalling. Gene Siskel said it was just terrible. Mad Max ripoff galore. But I mean, as we've seen in our Striker podcast,
well, a pox on their houses.
Yeah, exactly. That. And a pox on anyone who doesn't like apocalyptic movies, because they all have a certain structure that we come to know and love, and just because you're working within its confines, I think it's a fantastic scene to create. I love that humanity has to recreate itself, be reborn, if you will, to transfer and create a new world out of something that's decayed. It's rebirth, it's renaissance, it's transformation. This stuff is fantastic, and it shows people at their best. It's heroic. It shows people at their worst. Evil. So it's good versus evil. And this is the hallmark of any adventure. And we love this stuff.
And as you were saying, as we were watching this movie, if you would have seen this film in the 80s, you'd have been all over it.
Would have been elated. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over it now.
Yeah,
right?
I'm buzzing kind of
now.
I
was cheering near the end of this movie. I was cheering for Bodai. We'll get into that. Bodai is a glowing orb. It's a sphere, but it's much more than a sphere.
It's a god, yeah. It's a pan. It's an all-encompassing everything deity.
Never since the carbon rod of The Simpsons have I been so invested in an inanimate object. Although Bodai is not an inanimate object.
No, some of the characters have questions. Like, can he talk? Can he
feel?
Yeah.
And they say, even, like, oh, what's his name? He's a who, not an it. Bodai is a glowing orb, not unlike a lamp you would buy at IKEA, you know?
Well, I was going to go with Gaia, like a Mother Earth or something, but yeah, I like the IKEA lamp analogy.
On the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly.
And this Bodai is basically prophesized to come from the heavens to protect Earth and humanity, because we are, you know, we always have to have some sort of preamble at the beginning of these post-apocalyptic movies in order to kind of get the audience up to speed as to where we are, what the situation is. And what's going on is that humanity has been destroyed and it's rebuilding. So we're in the year 41 of this new world. And the Protectorate, as you were saying before, this fascistic, Gestapo-esque...
Yeah, a goose-stepping bunch of military types. Yeah. They're controlling the water.
They control all water on Earth. And this, so this is shades, of course. Well, I mean, this came much later, but Mad Max Fury Road. Mm. But also Stryker. That was another post-apocalyptic...
Yeah.
I was at Pulp, I'm saying that word. Yeah. Keysell Seashells by the Seashore.
Yeah, unique New York.
Or is it Keysell Sanctuary?
Yeah.
That's a song by the Cult. But anyway... So basically, where was I?
Yeah, you have
the water. Oh, yes, yeah, so the water. Striker.
Control over who has access to resources.
But we were talking about the movie Striker. Ciro Santiago directed a movie that we podcasted a bit, maybe like about a year ago or so, where it was the same premise. Water was scarce. That was the commodity they had to fight for and die for. Not gasoline. Not fuel.
No.
Water. Good old fashioned H2O. And there's only the scarce amount of this resource is protected by the aptly named Protectorate. And not only are they controlling all water on Earth, but they also control all life on Earth. Because, I mean, hey, water is life, life is water. And they operate these orphanages around the wasteland. If this sounds convoluted and confusing, don't worry about it. It is. And there's mention made of a race of people named the Chikaris. Not the chicaneries, but the Chikaris. And they have some sort of importance. And ultimately, the prophecy is that Bodai will eventually free the waters once again. So, when this movie begins, it's like we're in rollerball territory because we see a group of two groups of
combatants. Yeah.
And they're playing this sport, skateball. And it's quite similar to rollerball in a sense, although not as violent, but you know, they're playing it off premises, so they're allowed to, you know, kind of bend the rules here and there. But this is, for all intents and purposes, a kids' film. And the two teams are the Scorpions.
The evil German
guy. Not rocky like a hurricane.
Yeah.
There's no winds of change. Yeah. No, it's just the Scorpions versus the Solar Babies. Hence the title.
Mm.
And so good versus evil. Scorpions, Solar Babies. And one would think that this film would culminate in some sort of skateball
battle showdown. To the death for supremacy. But not.
No. Skateball is basically played in that scene, it's played in another scene, and then it's not really much of a issue in the film from here on out. I mean, the skills they use in skateball, i.e. roller skating, as they're roller skating across this desert wasteland.
Yeah, are utilized throughout to escape their antagonists. But really, like, this is not, I guess, as we were talking about, the sport that entertains the masses, because the Protectorate actually cracks down on this sport. So it's actually, it's almost like skateboarding in the 80s, where you'd have the authorities would come in and say, you can't skate here, and, you know, and we're just using the cityscape to, you know, to have fun and that. But it's clamped down. That's why I was sort of taken aback that the Scorpions are kind of the de facto team of the Protectorate, but not really.
Well, no, I mean, they want them to play the sport because, again, it harnesses their skills in order to be... Not even placating. It's to harness their skill to be warriors, to be soldiers. But what he took umbrage with, the evil guy, the leader of the Protectorate, the bad guy, not the good guy played by Charles Durning, the one played by Richard Jordan, is that they played... See, this is a prison. And yet this is a prison that is so easily escapable, it's not even funny.
Hmm.
At one point, they escaped the prison, and I'm like, are there any guards? How the hell did they escape the prison? But there was surveillance. At least there was surveillance.
There was. There's one camera that they quickly dispatched with a lacrosse stick and an aptly aimed stone to knock out the lens. And that was it. And these guys were off in hot pursuit of...
Bodai. Because Bodai... Okay, we got to go back. So first of all, there was some dispute with it because they were playing the game off-site, which is where they can...
For Bowden.
Play... No holds barred, no rules, versus on-site, which is sanctioned, etc. But, anyway, that's neither here nor there, because what we have here is a failure to...
enunciate the details of the film.
What we have here is a character by the name of Daniel, and he's played by Lucas Haas. And Lucas Haas, of course, is the big-eared kid from Witness. And also The Lady in White, and he was recently in The Revenant. And he comes across this orb, which is Bodai, and he's deaf. He can't hear. The only thing that allows him to hear is a giant set of
headphones.
And that gets crushed, but Bodai, this inanimate or animate deity that it is, restores his ability
to hear. Performs a miracle, essentially.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And one of the many that it does, and that's
He's like the Benny Hinn of glowing orbs.
Exactly. Can I get a witness?
He doesn't ask for donations, which is pretty damn
cool.
He doesn't
have that unholy hair. And
although there is, the Chitauri character, Darkstar.
There's a lot of unholy
hair. He's got
some
unholy hair.
And Bodai is a deity with omniscience and omnipotence, who can, you know, not like you do in a strip club with dollar bills, but he's able to make it rain. So there's this struggle to see who can, I guess, possess this deity so that they can do what they want with it. So you have the evil forces who want to quell this force for good, and the force for good who want to rescue this figure of Bodai and have it in their possession so they can use it for good and give, I guess, H2O to make it rain for the entire globe. So this is another, yes, environmental film. There's frequent references to, and I'm not sure when Greenpeace was founded, but I think it was in the 80s around this time, if not the 70s, to eco-warriors and all these visions about whether we can actually have rain again, and a book, the prophecy,
Here comes the rain again,
and the thunder clouds, and weather.
And the thunder rolls.
Thunder rolls. No, I thought you were going to go with Springsteen on this. But yeah.
By Brooks.
Okay, even better. And so, yeah, again, controlling who has possession of this orb is really what Solar Babies is all about.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what we have here, yet again, is not a failure to communicate, but a failure to sort of understand some of the machinations of the film. But eventually we do understand. So, these are all orphans, and they're stuck here in this
labor camp. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of them, this being Darkstar, not Darkstar, but Darkstar, played by Adrian Pazdar, who played Caleb in Near Dark, an incredible vampire film. Mm. He's, unbeknownst to him, a member of this, was it Chitauri tribe?
Yeah.
And he notices the magic of this orb. And how he notices it is kind of funny, because if you find some sort of object that's a deity, would the first thing that comes to your mind think, I want to play a sport using this as the
implement. As the object, it's a strange impromptu stickball game, where you swing a stick at the ball.
They end up playing a game of lacrosse using Bodai as the ball. I don't know about you, but I don't know. I mean, we're both agnostic, right?
Yes, but it's fair to say if we were to encounter some omniscient orb, mm-hmm. we would take it, put it in felt, put it in a lockbox, and put it in the closet.
I wouldn't be out playing, you know, road hockey with it.
Exactly it.
It's like Mr. Simpson doing off of my god of peanuts.
Yes.
Mr. Simpson, don't play lacrosse with my god. It's a terrible, terrible accent. But anyway, so in while they're playing it, we have a character. I mean, okay, I'm going to describe the Solar Babies in a second. There's a African, I guess American, I don't know, character by the name of Rabbit, and he starts doing some beatboxing and breakdancing with Bodai, which is hilarious, even in a
post-apocalyptic wasteland movie, there's always the brother who can do breakdancing, as they're trying to cover all the bases for what was en courant at the time, in the 80s.
Right. But the Solar Babies, I mean, what a motley crew.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you got their de facto leader, Jason, played by Jason Patrick. Now, our lives as podcasters would be so much easier if every character was named the same as the actors.
Yeah,
then I wouldn't have to remember names. Mm. But Jason Patrick, of course, the Lost Boys.
Yes.
And the debacle that was Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Mm.
Remember that one?
I do indeed.
Yeah, the one that took place on a boat.
Yeah.
Co-starring with him is the beautiful Jamie Gertz, also from The Lost Boys. We got three actors that were in pretty damn good vampire films in the 80s, you know, Pazdar,
Near Dark,
Gertz,
and Lost Boys.
So we get Jamie Gertz from The Lost Boys, Lesson Zero, the Can You Spare a Square Lady from Seinfeld. Remember that? Oh my god, we got James LaGrosse, who was in Phantasm 2, who replaced
plays Metron? Or Meltron?
Metron,
Voltron,
yes.
Voltron, I don't know. Yeah. He's got these Bertolt Brecht glasses, these ridiculous John Lennon glasses.
Yep. He replaced A. Michael Baldwin in Phantasm 2, soon to be replaced in Phantasm 3 by A. Michael Baldwin. And we have Peter Deloise, scion of
the DeLuise acting dynasty.
Don DeLuise himself. And of course from 21 Jump Street. Mm. And these are our solar babies. These are the ones that are going to go after the Chitauri guy, Darkstar, and get... Well, they go after Daniel, who goes after, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. It's like one chicken and the egg, what have you. But when they escape and they go after, and high adventure ensues, and which leads us to a Chitauri camp, which leads us to...
A Mad Max kind of camp.
Oh, a place called Tire Town, which is right out of Mad Max 3 Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah, and we got to say, I guess this...
I was expecting to see Tina Turner out and building and wheeling another hero. Yeah.
So what you have is everyone chasing after this orb, and it's taken possession in different guises here, and really it lands in possession of this mystery tribe, and then also
the Chitauris.
The Chitauri, and also in Dire Town, and
finds out that he is one of them. He is Darkstar, we see him often with an owl, and they ask him some sort of riddle, some sort of Zen koan. And he says something like, "Is that your owl?" He goes, "As much as an owl could be anyone's. You are a Chitauri, my son."
Yeah, exactly.
You are a Chitauri. And ultimately, though, Bodhi is going to fall into the hands of the enemies, into the enemy. And we find out that it's also referred to by another name, the Sphere of Longinus. And that made me laugh because, as much as I hate to admit it, I watch Modern Family every so often.
Yeah, it's a good show.
I really goddamn sick of it at this moment.
Oh, okay.
It's just on like 24/7.
Yeah, this is true.
There's nothing on TV in syndication anymore but Modern fucking Family. I'm done with Modern Family.
So what is this Longinus
Mitch and Cam, they got one of their friends, is Longinus. And the first time I ever heard that name, I was like, Longinus, that's a very strange name. Where did they come up with that? I'm wondering if this movie, Solar Babies, was the inspiration for the name Longinus in Modern Family.
Like Longitude, Longines, like the timekeeper, the Swiss timekeeper for Olympic races. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this name is supposed to refer to. But again, you know, you have our heroes who are trying to be chased. They're being chased down by the Protectorate, and the Protectorate has this means of controlling the population, which you don't really get a sense of. And it's called Surgical Alterant. And... they have this machine whereby they, if they capture you, they can make you hallucinate.
Your greatest fears.
Yes. Which is really awesome.
Where at one point they capture a Chitauri and he's strapped in this machine half naked, covered in ants.
Yeah. And meanwhile, they have the capability to create these hyper-advanced machines, and yet their compound is guarded by... Doberman pincers. So that's it. So they have the ability to make this machine, and yet they're also quite technologically backward in many respects. But again, what would a post-apocalyptic wasteland movie be without, you know, the heights and the depths of technology? You have crossbows, and then you also have this technology. So I guess you take what you can get from whatever's left over after whatever happened to this world. But ultimately, good versus evil. The Solar Babies versus the Protectorate. Who will triumph?
Not never really the Scorpions with the Solar Babies. I mean,
no, the Scorpions were left in the dust.
One member of the Scorpions, maybe there was a guitar player.
Yeah, Rudolf Schenker. I'm embarrassed to know.
Well, I was going
to
say who the lead singer is, but I don't know the name.
I don't either.
Was it like Hans something or other? Or Hans Gruber?
I don't know. I'm just glad I got the guitarist. Okay, but what is amazing about this? Because yes, it's good versus evil. Yes, it's control of scant resources. But I thought the film would be finished when our Solar Babies heroes made it to the Promised Land. They escaped Egypt and got to this place that has a wealth of water. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, okay, this is done. I asked you, how much more time is left in this movie?
Because at that point, all of a sudden, they go from this barren Mad Maxian wasteland to, like, Endor, across the Blue Lagoon. Yeah. And this man walks out who's the leader of this clan who has water and has a love... It's like paradise. It's Paradise City, basically.
It is paradise.
And I'm like, oh my God, that's the most interesting man on Earth. Like, you're reminding me of that guy from those beer commercials, Dos Equis.
Dos Equis.
Dos Equis?
Yeah, I think so. Whatever it is. He's the most interesting man in the world. And I thought, okay, their quest has ended because they've escaped their tormentors. What more do you need?
They had to save... the planet, and they had to... Bodhi, at this point, and remember, this is a glowing orb, this is a lamp, is being tortured by the Protectorate. They're trying to get this thing to to break, to talk,
yeah,
to do something.
To break, yeah, literally to break. Mm-hmm. Because they're aiming, I guess, you know, I want to do the Austin Powers lasers at it, and they're deploying their most high-tech technology, the term, what is it even called, the Terminator? I forget what this...
No,
it couldn't have been called
that. The robot,
that.
You mean, yeah.
Yeah, it was some advanced piece of robotics, and they had this thing in some sort of vice, and were trying to breach its hull. It's like... And they could not.
And then here I am going, when this drill bit, like, I mean, here you have Bodai.
Go orb.
Seriously, like,
yeah,
Bodai was
like,
burned to a crisp. And then this drill bit is trying to penetrate its hull, but it's so powerful an entity that it actually destroys this, like, carbon drill bit. And I'm going, yes,
yeah,
Bodai!
Yeah,
go,
yeah.
Bodai!
Yeah, and then it transforms into, from a solid into, I guess, a more ephemeral, like, powder in a way to lead the heroes to safety. So it sort of disperses into some kind of like ethereal gas in a way to lead up some stairs so our heroes can like take off
and then
escape the confines of the protectorate base.
And also return water to the barren wasteland that is.
Yeah, and it returns to the heavens to, I guess, from whence it came because it's otherworldly, you know.
Shades of E.T., poor Daniel,
yes.
Losing his...
The wave at the end, Shades of
E.T. Extraterrestrial entity. Oh, my God. This movie had a bit of everything.
It did, indeed.
But it was a lovable bouillabaisse, and I just really enjoyed it.
So what did we learn?
Well, we probably just spoiled the entire... we probably just...
Well, every post-apocalyptic wasteland movie has to have a goal... A tangible goal.
Well, there were literal goals in this one when they're playing the skateball.
Oh, well, yeah, that as well. But this one has two goals, so not only to try and find water, but also protect the thing that creates water. But also, every post-apocalyptic wasteland movie has a high priest. A high priest who's ancient, who's aged, antediluvian, 100-year-old figure who's got some weird white hair and makes all these weird pronouncements. That was the head of the charcuterie tribe. The chicanery tribe. The chicory tribe. Oh, my God. I'm throwing out all these food references. Whatever, the chicanery tribe. And this guy, again, you always have to have
the
a guy.
Chitty bang bang
tribe? Yes. You always have to have a high priest with a giant throne. And then you have to have figures who kneel in front of him and ask him advice. So, yeah, again, one of the hallmarks of the genre is so many of these things.
So are you referring to the priest that was living in the...
In the chicanery tribe. He's
white
hair.
I thought you were referring to the one that was living in the wax museum. Yeah, the one that was living in the wax museum.
With skulls and everything.
Yeah,
it's just great stuff. Like, I love this stuff. Like, you can't not love post-apocalyptic wasteland movies because you always have these questions. It's like, who is left to do the, like, who is, like, processing the natural gas to power these Mad Max kind of vehicles? Like, no one seems to be pumping gas or, like, seeking natural gas. Like, where do they get this stuff unless they have some reserve of oil? So there's tons of questions. You want to know how they breed, like, where the children are. Like,
the orphanage.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting thing because... They're quelling and trying to step on some of the, the identities of these orphans. And the one guy actually has tribal identity. And that's, I guess, you can almost link that back to modern times in Canada with the residential schools, where in our part of history, we tried to take native kids and stick them into a school system to get rid of their native culture. So it's kind of an interesting thing where these people don't know their family. And they mention at one point saying... We don't know who our parents are. So, like, they control reproduction. They control food. Actually, we don't see anyone eating. So I don't know how anything is grown in this place. It doesn't matter. Yeah, we don't see how they process natural gas. It doesn't matter. We have all these questions, but, again, it fits the bill. There's a quest. It's a high-adventure film with heroes, villains. Like, what did you learn?
Well, at one point, you know, there was a scene... Where the solar babies were trying to escape the
protectorate,
and they were roller skating away, and they had to leap a gorge, and it was just incredible.
Very Evel Knievel. Yeah.
And it was, and basically, what they did was the Dukes of Hazzard gambit. I mean, in the sense that they're on roller skates, you got to describe how they were able to leap over the gorge.
Well, they I guess link arms. because there's a team of, what, seven of them. Mm-hmm. They link arms and they start to spin in a circle to create the centripetal force. And then they send each one of them in succession over the gorge. And then you're left with, like, oh, the last guy left. What's he going to do? It's always like, you know, whoever, like, scales the wall in a prison, or it's like, oh, what's the last guy going to do if you don't have enough rope or you can't, don't have the strength to get the guy over? But the last guy to go is our hero, Jason Patrick. And he's got the muscle, he's got the heft, he's got the athletic ability to just propel himself over the gorge. Mm-hmm. So they don't even need this kind of, force to get him going. But
the Dukes of Hazzard gambit is always, like, you know, in every episode of Dukes of Hazzard, you have the General Lee, Bone Luke Duke, that always...
Yeah, traverse a river,
or some sort of bridge, or was collapsed, or some sort of gorge, and the
cop cars dogs, in hot pursuit were not, they never hit the brakes, and they skid out of control.
Skid out of control, they were falling to the gorge, or what have you, so that was lovely. I mean, this movie was just fun, and I kind of had a smile on my face from beginning to end. Great cast.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun
stuff. And again, like, they're living on, like, subsistence, I guess, agriculture, trying to, like, you know, farm water. But they also have these high-tech lasers. They also have this high-tech robot. Just hilarious. This movie apparently cost $26 million to make in 1980s dollars. It was a massive, massive box office flop, which probably accounts for us as...
Never hearing about it,
which is... amazing. More people should hear about it because it's incredibly fun, incredibly engaging, true heroism, lack of cynicism, and actually very innocent, because at one point in the entire town, the Mad Max confines of this walled town, which has a the typical Mad Max stuff where you got the wrecked cars and the tires and everything, there's actually an underground prostitution sector that's working, the women are working there, plying their trade, and one of them propositions one of our heroes and said, hey, you can have me for like 20 minutes for like $2 or whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself there and what I would be able to do. But yeah, and they're like, oh, what do you mean?
For what?
They're totally oblivious to any kind of, they're innocents. They're presumably teens. They're ignorant babies. Of sexuality.
They're babies.
Solar babies.
So, star rating, Chris.
Oh, fun. 3.25 for me. Hour and a half just flew by. There's terrific roller skate chases. There's amazing lacrosse battles. There's a Gestapo-esque figure who looks like he's wearing bath mat. Like rubber, which is just a great, great character. Charles Durning wearing this mustard robe and this tie that is absolutely ridiculous. Jason Patrick, fantastic Patrick. Jeez.
Well, how many times did you look at Jamie Gersico? Man, she's smoking hot.
It's several times. At least she is smoking hot.
At least 30 times.
She looks incredible as well. Mm. Like right now, she's got to be in her early 50s. She is. Lovely woman.
So you got a bumpy rating of 3.5. Yeah. 3.5 stars.
What your rating then?
Well, my rating is going to be 3.5. So, I really like it. Mm-hmm. So having said that,
check out our website, which we hope you will really like as well, and be sure to send us some suggestions for post-apocalyptic wasteland films, because we're always up for any genre. www.reallyawfulmovies.com and reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. Check us out every Friday for new episodes of the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
And thank you again, Dee, for sending us this film, and take care. Thank you.